today on 4CA. John McKenzie, 1300 872 911.
Now, for those people who watch these international developments with Australia's security in mind, these are very interesting developments. Let's have a look. We'll take it from the Courier today. Maintaining lines of communication between the Australian and Chinese military amid increased competition in the Indo-Pacific is a top priority for the two countries as relations, quote, continue to thaw. Now, Defence Minister, Deputy Prime Minister Richard Miles confirmed Australia and China are looking to resume their regular high-level military dialogue after meeting his Chinese counterpart. This is General Wei Fenghe on the sidelines of the ASEAN Defence Minister's Meeting Plus in Siem Reap in Cambodia. Mr. Miles said there'd been an important change in tone and mood in his exchange with General Wei. Look, it's interesting because a lot of long-time observers are saying, listen, don't get too excited here. They're master play actors are the Chinese. So please don't put this in headlines about defence breakthrough, because some people are saying it's far from a defence breakthrough yet. Encouraging, possibly, but let's not get ahead of ourselves. I put a call through with this in mind to Professor Greg Barton. Professor Greg Barton's been on this front for years. He's the international security expert and chair of global Islamic studies at Deakin University. Greg, good morning.
Good morning, John. Great to be back with you.
Isn't it interesting, Greg? Any number of people, the older, heads on the sidelines are saying, don't get too excited yet. Are they right?
They are right, but we're also right not to be too cynical, and it's important not to undervalue the importance of a thawing relationship. One of the biggest risks, John, is of an accident, of unattended cascading. We've seen this with wars before. You know, think about how wars begin. And it's not that China wants a war, although it's obviously committed to this idea of using whatever means it takes to retake Taiwan.
Yeah.
It can be dissuaded, but along the way, we hope it can be dissuaded indefinitely, but along the way, there's a chance of things escalating, and that risk is very much higher when we're not talking to each other. And it's not just Australia, of course, it's the West, but China's relationship with the West, with the US, Australia and allies, was heading into a Cold War situation, and that's not healthy. And this seems to be a reversal. So, yeah, it doesn't change the fact that, you know, China's an authoritarian state with an ultra-nationalist leader who has to sort of make China great again mantra like so many other leaders. Mm. It's dangerous, but it's a step back from the edge, and it should be applauded.
Yeah, and there's two fronts here. We're talking about one being defence and the other being trade. Trade, obviously, we're talking about $20 billion. It's really significant, but I'm just wondering, can you have one without the other? Or do they have to go cap in hand? What do you think?
Look, it's strange. It's a strange sort of dance the two do together.
Yes.
I mean, and you know, it's true. Cynical observers and wise observers say that, yeah, China is a master of charade and theatre. But actually, it's important to let them have their wins. It's important to let them feel that they're in charge of the stage. Because the China we want to be working with in the future, and we have to some extent been working with in the past, is a China that's committed to being globalised and integrated with the global system and sees the benefits of trade, but other kinds of global exchanges to outweigh any benefits from going it alone and having some sort of prideful, insular approach. So that openness of trade and that reliance on trade, which is really essential for China's economic growth,
yes,
that's therefore essential for the Chinese Communist Party staying. They can stay in power by force, but they want to stay in power because people want them. That's their dream. They need that economic growth, and they can't get it without trade. And that takes them away from slipping back to depending on shows of military strength and possibly making mistakes on that front. So, you know, it's intricately linked, and we're much better, have much better odds of having peace if there's strong trade and a strong buy into the international system.
You're sounding encouraged by these developments. If so, what do you think is the best we can expect? Like, for example, can we look at this stage at any sort of time frame, for example, the easing of these restraints on trade?
I think that will come. I mean, I'm not sort of I'm not sort of naive. It's not all, you know, all the way with the general way. it's good that it's starting to have an opening of a more normalizing communications. It's interesting, one of the details we heard, and these details are non-accidental, they're very carefully framed and released to us, is that one of the points they talked about was the ongoing detention of Cheng Lei, the Australian-Chinese journalist. And that's a really pointed issue, because that's, you know, we can sort of bind our time with trade, much as we dislike it, but we're not going to compromise on our position on human rights, including particularly Australian citizens.
Exactly.
And so it's good that this has come up. We heard it in Bali, we heard it with APEC, now we're hearing it again. So I think that's an important sign that the Chinese are prepared to, they won't say make concessions, they'll just say prepared to encouraging the strengthening of relations. But I think that the and we also heard, for example, that Prime Minister Albanese spoke about Xinjiang when he met with Xi Jinping. So those details being released to the public are important. I think we will see some payoff in terms of trade, not least because it's in China's benefit. But, you know, it's important we don't lose face, and that's why all of this discussion about CETA.
This is certainly encouraging. Thank you, Greg.
Great to chat, John. Thank you.
Professor Greg Barton, the international security expert and chair of Global Islamic Studies at Deakin University.